Good afternoon. This is Fanny Crawford, your Storytelling Hour host on Enlighten Radio, independent community radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. Today is Monday, April 24th. You can tune in on any internet device at www.enlightenradio.org. I am so pleased that we have with us today storyteller Jane Dorfman. She's participating by phone from Bethesda, Maryland. Hi, Jane.
Oh, hi. I'm so pleased to be here, even long distance.
Yeah. Well, the wonders of telecommunication.
Right.
This works well for us on many occasions. So thanks for clearing your schedule and being able to meet with me today.
Mm-hmm.
Your regular job, what you're not doing right now, because you're talking on air with us, is library work. Yes?
Right.
And so many storytellers started out as librarians that I thought I would ask you about what do you think is going on there? I probably have shared with you at some point that I'm the daughter of an archivist librarian. Mm-hmm. And there were many years when I assumed I would end up as a librarian myself. But why do you think that is? Why do, you know, aside from the fact that books are involved sometimes, what is it that intrigues librarians to move over to the oral tradition?
To the oral tradition. You know, librarians are readers, and these days most of our stories come to us from books. I mean, I will occasionally hear another teller tell a story, and I'll have to find that one. That's just perfect for me. But it's most often that I find them through reading.
Mm.
And I think being surrounded by these books is a great temptation to dip into them. And I think storytelling has long been a part of library work. There are storytelling groups that have been going on for 40 years, started in the District of Columbia, where people meet and tell stories to one another. And most often those are literary stories or fairy tales. But some of those are people are practicing and polishing personal stories as well. So I think that it's one of the reasons I think storytelling is associated a lot with children in our culture. It was because it was through libraries and through story times and gatherings of children. But I don't know otherwise why so many librarians are storytellers, but some of the best ones I can think of all started as librarians.
Yeah, and I really hadn't thought about that much until I started dipping into the storytelling world.
Kicking them off, yeah.
Yeah, and oh my goodness, right in this room here, I would think to myself, there's a dozen librarians. So,
right.
That was kind of cool. And you've been working with Voices in the Glen for a long time. Maybe not 40 years, but...
Not 40, but 25.
Yeah, wow.
And that's not even the group, the really old group that I said started in the district. That's even older than Voices in the Glen. Because Voices in the Glen is sort of a guild for Maryland, Virginia, and D.C., and anywhere else anybody wants to join, frankly. But they have swaps, monthly swaps. We rotate people's houses. We used to have a festival, and we may still again someday. We do Halloween storytellings and Telebration, which is a worldwide storytelling event the Saturday after Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do some of those big events, but mostly it's this local connection. And when I first moved up here, this was just such a welcoming group, and you know, people that I was on the same wavelength with, however strange that wave was. So it's been a real big part of my life.
Yeah.
And I've been stuck with the presidency for many years. But soon I am going to pass that on.
Well, congratulations.
Have
you found someone yet?
No, I have not.
Okay.
I keep looking. Okay. Threatening.
And
not like I do a whole lot except kind of boss people around and run the meeting.
You mentioned that you moved into the area, and you came from North Carolina? Is that what I mean?
New Orleans.
I'd forgotten
it
was that far away.
I grew up there, and I lived in Maryland and went to school in Maryland for years, and then because of my husband's job, we ended up back in New Orleans for 7 years, and then came up here.
Wow. So
that's kind of a storytelling culture, too, of a different sort, and my family certainly were all storytellers of family stories.
Yeah, that's a great place to begin your storytelling.
Usually the battling family stories. Like one, you know, my grandmother would tell me a story. My great aunt would later take me aside and tell me what really happened. And so
that's always the way it is.
Tradition in my family.
The liars, the exaggerators, the
yes,
people
who
tell
the star
the best.
Themselves, and other people felt like they really shouldn't have been the star of that story.
always good. Mm-hmm. So how do you spend your days at the library? What is your actual position?
I'm a children's librarian, and I work at the Davis Library in Montgomery County, and we have just reopened, so I have, up until now, just spent a huge amount of time getting books back on the shelves and trying to fit everything, and unfortunately weeding a lot of books, because you have to be willing to throw them away when you're a librarian, which is very hard.
Yeah, we
don't
have...
circulate, that get too beat up, that and the outdated ones I have no problem with, but I have a hard time weeding the other ones, but it's got to be done. So I've been doing a lot of that, and the library now looks very nice, and it's very clean and bright and modern-looking.
Very nice. Well, we have a new library in Hagerstown, mm-hmm. in Maryland, where I live, and the number of books that they discarded just because there was not space in the new library,
yeah.
less space for the staff.
When you reopen a library, everything is in. That's never going to happen again. So we really don't have a problem about keeping some carts in the back, because there will be space soon.
Hmm.
People will check out what's on the shelves, and then we'll fill in with these.
Oh, good.
We're not getting rid of that many.
Okay.
Maybe I shouldn't say that on the air. Someone will come in. Anyway, but yeah, so it's hard to weed the books.
Yeah. Well, I guess this is the time in the program where I usually do a calendar update. So if you don't mind, okay. I'm going to talk about Adam Booth's Speak Story Series. I know, Jane, that you know all about Adam's storytelling venue. And they've just moved to a new location right across the street from the Shepherdstown Community Building, where it has been for the past four
uh-huh.
years.
I had not heard that.
Yeah. And they're nice, cushy seats and a banked floor, so that the people in the back are a little raised up from the people in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, that is nice.
Yeah, and a nice big stage. And this past Tuesday, Antonio Rocha was the teller. That was the opening for season 5, mm-hmm. and he did an amazing job. I've seen him twice before, but every time I see him, he blows my socks off. He's just amazing.
Yeah, it's always surprising to me that he is, when I picture the story, I have more characters up there on the stage, and I know it was just him.
Yeah.
You know, it really is interesting.
He's a lot of fun. And then next month, pull out my cheat sheet here, Cenga Zalka on May 9th, mm-hmm. also at Reynolds Hall, across the street from the old venue, at 7:30, that's the second Tuesday. Cenga will be there with her new book. She has a book of Hungarian folk tales, some of the oldest stories in the world have been recorded from that area of the world. And so she'll be telling her magical folk tales from Hungary, as well as mm-hmm. old tales from other cultures. And she has a special love for those oldest, longest, epic tales.
Yeah, and she's another person who researches so
yes.
wonderfully and finds these stories and brings them, translates them to a lot of them.
Yeah, I know that process is near and dear to your heart. So I hope you'll mm-hmm. come to hear her on May 9th. And then June 13th, Charlotte Blake Alston will be here from Philadelphia. And that session is moving to the Storer Ballroom, which is the third floor of Shepherd University Student Center. But it's also at 7:30. And I know you know Charlotte Blake Alston. I don't know if you've mm-hmm. heard her before, but well, probably you have, because she's been at the Jonesboro Festival.
She's been at Jonesboro. I've seen her in D.C. Yeah,
okay, good. So she'll be doing a variety of African-American and African mm-hmm. stories, and probably a few from other places in the world. And, of course, she's another great award-winning teller.
Yeah, and travels worldwide.
Yes, yeah. I felt like I pulled off a great coup last year because we had her at Stories in the Round in Hagerstown over the summer, and she mm-hmm. not only told to the adult audience in the evening, but she also agreed to do an after-school program with kids in Hagerstown. And these were not kids who were used to sitting still for storytelling. So there were just under 100 of them in a tiny little mm-hmm. Park shelter. They crammed in there. But she did a wonderful job and really mesmerized those children. So I felt like we really did a great thing bringing her mm-hmm. to town that day. On July 11th, also in the Storer Ballroom at the Shepherd University Student Center at 7:30, Kevin Locke, who's a world-famous visionary hoop dancer and player of the indigenous Northern Plains flute, as well as a traditional storyteller. So he was raised up and trained by his Lakota people and the Anishinaabe in his family, but he performs a lot of different Native American traditions and apparently needs a lot of space for his hoops.
Yeah, so I would think so.
I'm looking forward to seeing him.
Don't sit in the front row.
Yeah. So. I usually do sit in the front row, so I might move back
a bit.
I'm
sure they'll push it back.
And then on August 8th, Jane, tell us about August 8th at Speak
so
Story Series.
I'm looking forward to that. I am telling stories from the Arabian Nights. And these are stories, old, old stories, and I think probably ones that people will not have heard before because we are familiar with Sinbad and Aladdin and Ali Baba, mm-hmm. which were probably not even part of the original collections, but there is just a wealth of stories. These complete collections are like 26 volumes of books.
Wow. Do you have a complete set yourself?
I do not.
Because you use...
I have several different translations. I have the original of the Burton, which was sort of the Victorian one, mm-hmm. which is very flowery language. But the one that I have told mine from is one that was translated by an Arabic speaker into English, which is usually backwards of the way it's usually done. And his name is Hadawi, Haddawy, Hussein Hadawi. And I really find those just beautiful translations.
Mm.
I can't read Arabic, but I am told that he has kept the flavor of the Arabic, mm-hmm. the rhythms, and I think they're really good. That's the translation I use.
So if Burton is Victorian, what time period is the Hadawy translation?
In the late 90s.
Okay.
It's a recent translation.
1990s.
Yeah, 1990. No, you're not 18 or 17, no. He's a recent translator, and there's at least one notable thing that I think is a translation problem. He compares this woman's belly to a mound of white benzoin ointment. And he means that in a flattering and even erotic way, but I mean, that just does not work for me.
Oh, wow.
All I can think of is a great big pile of sunscreen. So I think that's a little cultural thing.
Yeah,
but
sounds
by
like
and large,
it.
The language is just beautiful. So I do not tell them word for word because the stories are very, very long. And I had, when I was asked to do this, should I let you finish with the rest of the year?
No, I want to hear this first.
Okay. When I was asked to do this, someone I knew, a librarian at Montgomery College, had gotten a grant called Muslim Journeys.
Oh.
She had some book authors come, and she had some religious people, but she wanted to get the Arabian Nights stories. So she asked me if I told Arabian Nights, and I said no, but I would love to learn some. So I had a real long lead time, and I began reading and reading and reading. And at first I was really worried because these stories are like boxes or nesting dolls. I mean, they go on for 100 pages, and they, you know, 10 people will come to a party, and each one will tell a story. And some of the people are actors in the other one's stories, and all sorts of bizarre things happen. So it took a while for me to find stories that I liked that were vaguely linear.
But you do such a good job when you're telling of opening those boxes. It's wonderful to hear you tell.
I really have to, and you know, sometimes go back and tell the audience, do you remember that I told you they look just alike? Because they will have forgotten it by the time that plot element comes to the forefront, you know. Yeah. So I have to kind of keep the audience, to remind them a little bit. But so I'll be telling those Arabian Nights stories, which are quite adult. I have cut out a little bit of the adultness for embarrassment's sake, that I didn't feel like I could stand up in front of people and face a lot of that erotic poetry. But I've kept some of it, and I have kept I've kept a lot of it, actually. And I've kept the plot. I didn't feel like I had the liberty to fiddle with the plot.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is some fiddling I would have done. I mean, there's a jewel that has a very important role in the plot. It's never explained how it got its magic powers, and once it's done messing up everybody's lives, you know, you don't hear any more about it. You know, and if I were at liberty to fiddle with the story, I would have it set in the crown or thrown in the ocean, you know, something.
Oh, yeah.
Not just plop, dropped away from the story. We don't know anything more about it. But I've tried very hard not to do that.
So you're going to be appearing with this story at,
stories, and then this in the frame story of Scheherazade. You know,
okay. On August 8th, for Adam Booth's series Speak, and that's 7:30 in the evening.
You know where that one's going to be?
Yeah, that's back at Reynolds Hall, which will be the primary site now that they've moved to that location. So we'll be in those cushy seats to hear you tell.
Hope to keep people awake.
Yes. You will. They're mesmerizing.
I will.
All right, then in September, Bill Harley is coming on September 19th, 7:30 in the evening, also at Reynolds Hall. And, of course, you know he's a multiple Grammy Award winner and 35 other amazing awards for his recordings. Yeah, he's been around for a long time, but he really is a stellar performer. And
with a real social conscience. I mean, he lends his talents to a lot of good causes.
And a very funny guy, too.
Yeah.
Fun to hear. Then on October 10th, Jan Blake will be joining the Speak audience via Skype. So last year, Adam brought Daniel Morden to the Speak series via Skype, and it worked so well. Daniel could see us in the audience, and we could see him, and there was banter back and forth. It was a lot of fun. So on October 10th, Jan Blake will be joining us from England. And she's been performing worldwide for over 25 years. She specializes in stories from Africa, the Caribbean, and Arabia. And she's supposed to be quite a dynamic teller. Mm-hmm. I have not heard her before, but I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, it's always neat to hear tellers you have never heard before.
Yeah.
I mean, you want to hear the old favorites, but it's good to broaden.
And I think she's very popular across the Atlantic, so we'll get to hear that. Oh, and she'll do some spooky stories too, because it is October storytellers have to have our spooky tellings at that point. November 14th, the Poet Laureate of West Virginia, Mark Harshman, will be at Speak at 7:30 at Reynolds Hall again. All of these last sessions are at Reynolds Hall, just across the street from the old venue. And he's authored 14 children's books besides all of his poetry and won a Smithsonian Notable Book Award for The Storm, which is a children's book. Also a recipient of the Weatherford Prize for a full-length collection of poems. He's been anthologized by Kent State University Press, University of Iowa, University of Georgia, and University of Arizona. So... And I've never heard him tell. I need to get online and YouTube and get to listen to him so I know what to be prepared for. And then December 12th, to close out the season, Adam Booth will be the featured teller. And he's promised to do not only some traditional mountain stories, but also some of his own contemporary work. And
That's a wonderful lineup.
Isn't it amazing?
Not he's really done a good job. But it's a small part of that, but it is a wonderful lineup.
Oh, you don't sound immodest at all. You are a great addition.
I hope they realize how lucky they are to have these people come to their doorstep.
Well, for Antonio's telling last week, he made sure everybody in the audience knew what a big deal it was to have this series in town and to get to hear these tellers from all over the world.
Yeah, walk down the street and you get to hear. That's terrific.
Walk home before dark, or not before dark, but before bed.
Not too long after. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's time for me to do a station ID.
Okay.
You're listening, listeners, to the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour, and this is Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host. Today's Monday, April 24th, 2017, and we have a special guest with us today, storyteller Jane Dorfman, who will be part of the Speak Story series that Adam Booth coordinates. On August 8th, Jane will be here in Shepherdstown, but today she's joining us by phone from Bethesda. Are you calling from the library, Jane?
No, I'm at home.
You're at home.
I don't go to work today till late, and then I work till 8 o'clock.
So our gain, their loss.
But this is a very nice way to start the day.
It is. Thank you for being with us. So I understand that you are willing to tell a story today. Is this a good time to do that? Are you...
Yeah, sure.
Ready to go with that? Okay. So this is something from the Arabian Nights?
It's going to be actually a piece of one. The Arabian Nights are famous for long stories.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do the Arabian Nights, if your listeners don't know, I'm just going to launch into it, are all set in a wonderful frame story. Scheherazade, it's a name everybody knows. There was a king whose wife had been unfaithful, and he had her put to death, and he decided that all women were evil. But he was not ready to give up the company of young women, and because he was the king, he married a different girl every morning, had a wedding night with her, and had her put to death the next day. And this went on night after night, and finally the vizier's daughter, the poor vizier whose job it was to usher the young women away to be have their heads taken off, his own daughter demanded that she be the next bride. And he tried to talk her out of it, but she insisted. So she asked only that she be able to tell her younger sister a story after the lovemaking, and the king agreed to that. So after their wedding night, the younger sister sat outside the door, and Scheherazade told the king this story. This is one of them. "Have you heard, O auspicious king, the story of the fisherman and the jinn?" And we pronounce that word genie, but the singular is really pronounced jinn. "There was once a poor old fisherman who could barely put food on the table for his wife and daughters, and every day he went down to the sea, and he flung his net four times. Now he went down this day, and he flung it, and oh, he pulled it, and it was so heavy. And he pulled, and he pulled, and he got it up on the beach, and it was mud and rocks. 'Oh,' he said, 'there is no God but God, and you know my need.' So he dried the net, and he mended the net, and he cast it again. It was also heavy. And he pulled, and he pulled, and he pulled, and it was shells and broken pots and mud. And his heart sank, and he again dried it and mended it, threw it a third time. It was very heavy. And he pulled, and he pulled, and it was the stinking time to pull the net in.
Yes.
So he pulls, and he pulls, and there's a jar, a curious brass jar. Well, it wasn't treasure, but it would bring a few pennies in the brass market, and it was heavy. He could not even lift it. He rolled it up onto the beach, and the lid of the jar was sealed with lead, and a curious seal, like from a seal ring, was imprinted in the lead, and the fisherman pried the seal off, thinking he would empty the water, but no water flowed out. He thought that strange, but soon an oily black smoke began to come out of the jar, and it rose into the sky, and it blocked the sun, and it resolved into a terrible jinn, with ears like bat wings and long fangs and a fingernail like a scimitar that could pierce a man on each hand. And he bowed to the fisherman, and he said, 'Oh, mighty Solomon, forgive me for my evil deeds.' And the fisherman looked up at the jinn, and he said, 'Solomon has been dead for centuries.' And the jinn straightened up, and he said, 'Solomon is dead?' 'Yes,' said the jinn, 'Solomon is dead.' 'Oh, that is good news. "For that, fisherman, I will grant you a wish." The fisherman was very excited, and he began to think of the wishes that he might wish to feed his family and clothe them. And the jinn said, "I will let you choose the manner of your death." "The manner of my death? But I have rescued you from that jar." "Yes, and that is why I am letting you choose, rather than something that I would dream up for you." "But that is not fair," said the fisherman. "Let me tell you my story," said the jinn. "I was one of the jinns who rebelled against Solomon, and I would not do his bidding. And his loyal jinns brought me before him and forced me to kneel, and still I would not yield. And he sealed me in this jar, and he pressed his seal ring with the name of God," and here the jinn gave a little shudder, "and his loyal jinn cast the jar far out into the sea. Now for the first 100 years, I resolved that whoever released me from the jar, I would make him king among men, but no one came. And the second 100 years, I said that I would give whoever released me a wish every day for the rest of his life. Still nobody came. And then for the next hundreds of years, I said that whoever released me, I would build him a grand palace. But no one came. And so finally I decided that whoever released me, I would let him choose the manner of his death. So choose, and be quick. I have things to catch up on." Now the fisherman was very frightened, but he thought to himself, I am a creature made by God. He is made by Satan. Surely I can outthink him." So the fisherman looked at this huge jinn, and he said, "Answer me a question truthfully." "All right. In the name of Solomon..." Oh, and again the jinn gave a little shudder. "Tell me, were you really in that jar? It is not big enough." "I was in the jar." "I do not believe you." "I was in the jar." "I still do not believe you. Must I prove it to you?" "Yes," said the fisherman. And the jinn swirled into a cloud of smoke and swirled and sucked himself back into the jar. And quickly the fisherman clamped on the lid. And the jinn said from the jar, "You believe me now?" "Yes," said the fisherman. "And I've got you, too." "Oh," said the jinn, "do not do this. Do not do it. You were going to kill me who has done you nothing. I am going to push your jar far out into the ocean. You were in there for hundreds of years. You will be in there till doomsday. I will build a hut right here and tell all the fishermen not to fish, for there is a deceitful, lying jinn just offshore." "Oh, fisherman, do not do that." And the fisherman and the jinn argued back and forth, and they told one another stories. And finally, the fisherman agreed to let the jinn out of the jar. And he pried the lid off, and the jinn said, "Come with me, fisherman, and I will show you where there are enough riches that you may spend the rest of your days in wealth." And he did. But that is a story for another night. For as I said, these Arabian Night stories go on and on and on. The end. Thank you.
I love that story, Jane.
I do, too. And it gets better, too, but it's very complicated.
Yeah. Well,
and with recordings and on the radio, you know, I feel like I'm telling with one hand behind my back. Because
yes,
it's hard when the audience cannot see me.
Yeah. No gestures. But I.
No movement.
I
am moving, but you can't tell.
I did notice that wonderful echoing voice you used for the jinn inside the jar. Yes. That was good.
Yeah.
Well, our listeners just have to come out and see you on August 8th at the Speak session.
It's a fun story, and then I tell the second one is even longer, and that's Kumar al-Zaman and Prince Budar.
Oh, yeah.
It's not the whole story, but it's about an 85-page story that is...
That's the one with the nesting stories. One
that's
inside
the one
the
with
other.
The nesting stories and the erotic poetry.
Yeah, but it has quite an ending. It's amazing. Okay, well, we just have to encourage everybody to come out on August 8th
come out
to hear
it.
You
and
tell.
I hate to not tell them the end of the story, but that is sort of an end. And in a lot of the children's books, since the story takes a very adult turn, that is where the story ends.
Okay.
They don't go on into the rest of it.
No. Well, tell our listeners a bit about how you choose which parts to tell and how long it takes you to develop one of these stories?
The choosing is that, you know, most of the stories I tell the entire story.
Mm.
And I may leave out a few little details sometimes, but I try to keep flavor of the story. And some stories, you know, I feel like they are in a historical and literary tradition, and I really don't have any business messing with them.
Mm.
and I really get aggravated. There's a very powerful story collected in Haiti. And the children are come forward one at a groups at a time. They wear black, they wear red, they wear white. And those are really storytelling and folkloric colors.
Hmm.
I have seen tellers to try to encourage children to participate. Will you wear those pink shoes and meet me in the morning? No. You know, there's some things you just can't fiddle with.
Yeah.
So I try not to fiddle too much. But I read a great deal, and, you know, sometimes a story just hits you. You know, that's a story
right.
for me.
Right.
And you do have to read and listen a lot. And I try not to listen too much because if I want to tell that story later, I can hear myself channeling the teller I heard it from.
Mm.
And that's flattering to that teller, but that's not good for me. I shouldn't. You know, I don't want to pick it up like that.
Yeah, so reading's a better way to go.
Because that's something that they've worked on that's a personal thing.
Sure.
And
yeah.
It's like copyright infringement. It's like plagiarism, sort mm-hmm. of.
Yeah, although I have had a few storytellers give me permission to tell, I think just twice it's happened, where tellers
yeah.
have said, oh, go ahead and
I can
and
tell their version,
story.
But I mean, I can imitate their voices.
Oh.
And, you know, I just hear it creeping in.
Yeah, yeah.
So I try not to do that, and I try to do enough to the story. I'll find several versions. I try to
that's
make
the best
story
way.
My own.
Yeah, that's always the best way to find
yeah.
a couple versions. So how long does it take on average? I know it's different for different stories, but
it's different for different stories. It may take me, for some stories, a couple days, a couple reading throughs. You know, and then the more you tell it, the more practiced you get. And then sometimes you even see other things in the stories.
Yeah, the story changes over time.
Yeah, and,
yeah.
you know, there's a story that I've told for a long time, and I finally did have to add a little something. There's a little widow's lazy daughter, and the fairies help her, and there's no reason for those fairies to help her. She's a lazy girl. She never does any work, and she gets to marry the prince anyway, and nothing bad happens to her, which, since I was sort of a lazy daughter myself, I really liked that story. But I have her in the story putting out a dish of milk for the fairies. So that she remembered that. Because often in folktales, especially for children, there's sharing things, sharing your food, don't turning old, helping the old people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and good things will happen to you. And when your siblings go and try it and they don't do these things, you know,
bad things
they don't
happen.
Get to spit out golden coins. When they talk, out come frogs and toads. So there is also that element of doing something nice for somebody else. And they'll help you.
Well, I had a question for you about the Arabian Nights specifically.
Uh-huh.
Do you know if these stories are still being told on a regular basis in that region of the world?
I do not think so. And sometimes I doubt they were ever, unless the listeners were so incredibly good listeners.
Hmm.
These stories could go on, even just to read them through for an hour.
Yeah.
Not let alone remember everything that you're supposed to be remembering. But there was a different, you know, pre-TV, pre-screens,
mm-hmm.
you know, people probably had better memories. So I have heard that they are still told in some coffee shops in the Middle East. And a lot of those stories didn't, you know, some of them are from India, some of them are, you know, it was a great crossroads, and all the stories came there. And so their origins are really kind of murky.
Mm. Yeah.
But I think there are places where you can still hear the Arabian Nights being told. There is a book by Tahir Shah called, I think it's called In Arabian Nights. He and his family went to live in Morocco, and it's him trying to track down people who are telling these stories.
Hmm.
And so it's an interesting book in all, but there is this looking for the tellers.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful to hear the backstories themselves, but then to hear the backstories and
Yeah, and some of them, when people have looked at some of these stories linguistically, these were, when these stories hit Europe, when Burton's translations came out, I mean, it changed the culture. People wanted to have Arabian Nights parties. It changed clothes. If you look at fashion magazines, you see suddenly ladies were wearing little turbans and feathers, and they did their home decorating changed. And then some people have suggested linguistically that some of these stories were written in French and then translated into Arabic.
Uh-huh.
So it's really hard for scholars to get a hold of a definitive original collection.
Hmm.
You know, some are from the 1400s, some came up later, some who knows where they came from. So, if you really get into it, you can read all those scholarly commentary on the on the nights.
I do remember lots of photographs of Victorian women in harem pants.
Mm-hmm, right.
Which is kind of odd.
They had just never heard anything like this. And the harem is always so exotic. And, the part of the world you don't know anything about. And it's funny, in the nights when they have to get somebody really exotic, they're the emperor of China. And I think they had no connection with China. They certainly couldn't have ridden there in a couple of days, but, that for them was the exotic place.
Okay. All right, well, I'll do another... Well, actually, I was going to ask if you would do a station ID for us.
Okay.
If you're willing to do that. So we're putting out there who we are.
So this is Enlighten Radio. Mm. And you can listen to it online at www.enlightenradio.org. And Franny Crawford does this every week. And it's just a wonderful series. And I think all of the listeners want to thank Enlighten Radio for making it possible.
And we want to thank Jane Dorfman. Jane Dorfman doing...
That was Jane Dorfman, not Fanny Crawford.
Thank you, Jane.
Oh, you're welcome.
I have this vision that we'll have a collection of every storyteller who ever did an interview with us on air, and we'll be able to play those back at some time in the future to do other
or the greatest hits, the greatest hits clip. Show. That'd be fun.
So you are preserved for posterity with your little ID.
For posterity, yeah. Okay. I really love these Arabian Nights. I tell a lot of Irish stories. I tell a lot of Celtic in general.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
I tell a few personal stories, and I like those too. And I'll tell the drop of a hat, but. it's just really a wonderful thing, and I think people they underestimate their abilities to tell a story, and they way underestimate how much they would like listening to stories.
Well, the Arabian Nights just have this unique position in folklore. I think, first of all, that there are so many pieces, so many smaller stories packed in there, and then the way the frame is hung together is just fascinating.
Yeah, it's a beautiful frame.
Yeah, and some of it's tragic and ugly and the worst of humanity.
Yeah, and the fact that she stayed with him after all those murders.
Yeah,
previous wives. Yeah,
But she changes him. He becomes a good person.
That is what Hedaway says in his introduction. She cures him of his madness with stories.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to do another little calendar piece. I want everybody to know that Eloise Schottler is with us this evening in Hagerstown at 7 p.m. at Stories in the Round. This is the kickoff for the season number 4 for Stories in the Round, and that's still meeting at the same place after all these years at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown at 13245 Searfoss Pike. That's Salem Avenue extended at the west end of town. And Eloise will be joining us to tell her part of her World War I series. She has told her original story from that grouping called The Hello Girls, which was about the telephone operators who were shipped from the U.S. to France, the French front, by General Pershing to help win the war over there. And this one she's going to tell this evening is about the nurses from the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing in Baltimore, who were again shipped over by General Pershing. And this was long before there was a women's military presence So these are the foremothers of the women who joined the military in our time and in between that time and this mm-hmm. time. And she's Eloise has done an amazing amount of research to put these stories together. She talks about individual women. She's been reading their letters home to their families. She's taken some trips.
Graves at Arlington.
Yeah, yeah. And she's taken some trips across the country to get to see some of their uniforms and meet their family members. I think our listeners and the audience will be really pleased to hear her tell this story this evening. So if you're interested in coming, you can just show up at the door at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Hagerstown at 7 o'clock this evening, $12 at the door. If you get in touch with me, Fanny Crawford, at 301-730-1638, you can probably get tickets in advance, and then it's just $10. But in either case, come out to hear Eloise Schottler tell Ready to Serve, her World War One story about the nurses from Johns Hopkins School of Nursing, 1917, crossing the Atlantic, and the lives they saved once they got there. So I wanted our listeners to know about that, and I can tell you all a bit about the rest of the roster, at least through August. May 22nd, at Stories in the Round in Hagerstown, storyteller Lynn Ford, who's a festival teller and tells to adults, children, and family audiences. This, of course, Stories in the Round is an adult audience, although children over 12 are welcome if they're accompanied by a parent or a adult group leader. Lynn Ford is a fourth-generation teller from Appalachia. She's also a teaching artist with the Ohio Alliance for Arts Education, and she does storytelling workshops as well. And I just recently learned she's a laughter yoga teacher. Did you know that, Jane?
I've seen her do that at a conference. It was really it was something I thought, this is weird, I'm not going to play along, but it was really
it
fun.
Really grabs you and pulls you in, doesn't it? So she's going to tell some grandma stories, and she always tells cooking stories. She always has food figuring prominently in her stories. So we're looking forward to that. And that's May 22nd at Stories in the Round in Hagerstown at 7 p.m. Tonight, of course, is Eloise Schottler at the same location at the Unitarian Universalist Church. June 26th, Andy Offit Irwin will be coming to Stories in the Round. He's going to do a workshop for us on the weekend. So if any of our listeners are interested in that, there are not very many spaces left, but there are a few. So you can call me at 301-730-1638 if you're interested in Andy Offit Irwin's workshop. You can also reach me at email. If you're calling about tonight's show with Eloise Schottler, don't use email because I may not get it in time. But you can call that phone number, 301-730-1638, for tonight's performance. But for the June 26th workshop, or to get tickets for Andy Offit Irwin, you can try my email, Fanitsky, F as in Fanny, F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y at hotmail.com. And Andy will be with us on June 26th. I hope our listeners know of him. He's a internationally known symphonic whistler, as well as a humorist, a storyteller, and a singer-songwriter. You know, when I was researching Jane to know what to put in his little bio, this guy has done everything.
He's everything.
Just amazing.
Shakespeare, everything.
Yeah. Yep.
He's a gem.
Yeah, he whistles Dvorak and Thelonious Monk, Ellington and Romanian pan flute traditional concertos. I mean, he's just amazing. Of course, I have heard him do some of this, but I didn't realize the range. And then July 24th, Eileen Evans, another Appalachian teller, is back with Stories in the Round for the first time in 3 years for an evening of historical portrayals and traditional Afro-Latchian stories from the hills of West Virginia, mm-hmm. Kentucky, Ohio, Tennessee, and on south. And of course, Eileen was trained as a dancer, as well as using poetry and story and song and rhythm in her stories, in her multicultural stories. So that's July 24th. And then the fourth Monday in August, which is not right in front of me, but Megan Hicks will be our storyteller for the eighth month, August. So that'll be the fourth Monday. And I don't have confirmations back on the rest of the year, so I'm going to stop there. But I hope...
Quite a lineup already. That's terrific.
I'm hoping our listeners can come tonight to hear Eloise tell.
It's really a nice space to listen. I've told there. It's a nice space to listen in and be in.
You told Arabian Nights that night.
I think I told my Daddy's on the Roof story there, too, didn't I?
Yeah, I think you did. Yeah.
Daddy's on the roof and he's got the axe. Yeah.
Very scary story that ends well for most of the participants.
It's a personal story.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's see where we are in the hour.
Can I put in a little plug for the Washington Folk Festival?
Please do. That was on my list to ask you about.
This year is its 36th annual. It's at Glen Echo Park in Bethesda. It's free. There's free parking. There's a free shuttle from the parking lot.
I did not realize it was free, Jane. That's amazing.
It's free. It's tellers and musicians and dancers all from the Washington area. So it's local talent, which is why I can't ask you.
I know.
I would in a heartbeat.
And
it's five stages of dancing and music. There's dancing to participate in the Spanish ballroom, and there is a dedicated storytelling stage both days.
Mm.
So it's June 3rd and 4th this year, and it's always the first full weekend after Memorial Day.
So good to know.
Worth finding out about.
How can our listeners get more money?
FSGW, Folklore Society of Greater Washington.com. They are the ones who put it on and put the bill for it. And it's rain or shine. It's really a wonderful event. About 10,000 people come over the 2 days.
Lovely.
A big event that a lot of people have never heard of.
So. Yeah. And this is, which annual is this? How many years has this been going?
I think it is the 36th.
Oh, my.
Yeah. It's been going on a long time. I could not swear to that. Numbers are...
But close.
Not my total thing, but I think that's it.
A venerable institution.
Yeah. And it just gets better and better.
Okay. Well, I'm going to try to get there. That's a difficult weekend for me, but I'm going to try to be there for at least part of the time. Do you have additional closing words that you want to share with the audience? Or
I would tell people, and I frequently tell this in my stories, is to get those family stories, those stories and bits of stories that only your family knows, those songs that the old ladies sing and know. My family knew a song for every occasion, and I was very annoyed when I was a kid, and they would start singing these little songs. And man, I wish I'd learned them, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd gotten clear on these stories, because once the older family members are gone, there's nobody to ask.
Yeah.
So I would say to learn those stories, and then I also tell an Irish story called The Man Who Had No Story, where he tells these people he has no story, he doesn't know any stories, and then the fairies set out in a big way to give him one. And so that he has one to tell next time, and you don't want to be in that position. You want to learn some stories and tell them.
Yes, that is a cautionary tale for people who think they have no story.
Yep.
Okay, well, I'm going to do one more little commercial break here, and then I'm going to come back and ask you one more question, Jane, before I let you go, if that's okay.
Well,
if you're not in a big hurry.
Fine.
Okay. I wanted to make sure listeners know that you can listen to former interviews, former broadcasts of the Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour by going to the webpage. That's talltales.enlightenradio.org, and there are podcasts there going back quite a ways. We've only been on the air since September, and I think I've only posted maybe a dozen of our broadcasts. But if you miss us when we're not on air, when it's not Monday, you can always tune in to one of those podcasts. So, for example, on March 20th, we had a celebration of spring, and we were telling Demeter and Persephone stories, and Stash Zilkowski was with us on air that day. On March 27th, Adam Booth was talking about the creative process, and he told a new version of Rapunzel that he's working on. So you can check that one out. On April 3rd, we followed up on that Rapunzel theme. I told an ancient, the oldest known version of Rapunzel, which is a Persian version that I researched. And then I told a contemporary original version of Rapunzel. On April 10th, we were talking about tall tales, and I had a late 19th century African-American version of Pecos Bill, and we talked a bit about Pecos Bill being a relatively recent phenomenon that was a development from chambers of commerce and various other commercial interests. Yeah. did you have Pecos Bill in your textbook, in your literary textbook as an elementary school kid, Jane?
I've always assumed he was a folk character.
Yeah, most people do. Yeah, that was very interesting.
Really is now. He's entered the folk tradition.
Yes. So, listeners can go to www.talltales.enlightenradio.org to hear those older podcasts. So, Jane, I wanted you to share with us where our listeners can learn more about your story schedule, or how they can find out where to hear you, besides coming to, obviously we want them to come first to, on August 8th to the Speak Storytelling Series that Adam's coordinating, but what else?
Yeah, well, Voices in the Glen has a really wonderful website now, newly updated, and it has not only the Voices events, but it has events all over. There's lots of stuff in Baltimore, there's stuff obviously in Hagerstown, and there's a really good and complete calendar. There's a lot of personal stories going on. There's stories telling, name I'm blanking on, there's some in Virginia, there's some in D.C., story slams, story contests, just lots of storytelling events. You could fill every night with something. And those are on the calendar, and that's a great place to look. And there's also the National Storytelling Network, which is a nationwide, worldwide, actually, group for storytellers. And they have a good calendar, and they have a lot of nice resources on their calendar.
Okay.
And the web is a great place to find stories. I mean, you can find full texts of old, old books that it would be very hard to get even with through interlibrary loan. And, so it's really a wealth of story information out there.
Will you have your CDs with you when you come on August 8th to Shepherdstown?
I will. I have two. I have one of the Arabian Nights, and then I have one which is called Tales from the Arabian Nights, and then I have one called A Man Who Had No Story, which is mostly Celtic stories, but a few others thrown in.
Okay.
But, those will certainly be for sale.
Okay, and I think I
thank
forgot...
Thank you for mentioning them.
I forgot to tell our audience that if you're interested in getting tickets, or getting either tickets or a new membership option for the Speak Storytelling Series, the old website doesn't work. So if you've been trying to access the schedule, that won't help you. You need to go to www.speakstoryseries.com, and you could also access Adam by phone, 304-886-9481. Either way, if you're just purchasing tickets, there's no advance tickets anymore. You can just show up at the door. But if you're interested in a membership to support the series,
sometimes they sell out.
Yeah, they do.
Watch out.
They may sell out. I think there have been a couple times they have sold out so far. But the new membership series or membership option not only features a discount for the series as a whole, but you also get invited to special events, including meet and greets with the tellers and a couple little celebrations, I believe. So,
that's nice. Always good to get something special when you join.
And you are treated like a VIP when you when you get a membership. I've already gotten my membership and was used that this past week to hear Antonio Rocha. Jane, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, I really enjoyed
today.
It. Thank you for having me on.
It was fun.
And I hope to see some of your listeners in August, if not before.
Yeah.
Sounds good. That would be great.
Maybe we'll see you at the Folk Festival.
I hope so.
Also on June 3rd and 4th.
3rd and 4th.
Okay.
12 to 7, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. And we will
you're
be
quite
in touch.
Welcome.
Okay. Have a good work day.
Yes. Well, okay. It'll be better for having started it like this.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye, Jane.
Bye-bye.
This is Fanny Crawford on the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. That was Jane Dorfman, who joined us for the hour and told a little bit of the opening to the Arabian Nights. And she will be telling more of those stories on August 8th with the Speak Story series here in Shepherdstown. And you can also see her at the Washington Folk Festival on June 3rd and 4th, although I don't know that she'll be telling there. I think she's coordinating and she'll be busy handling logistics, so I'm not sure she'll actually get to tell anything during that time. You're listening to Fanny Crawford on Enlighten Radio Storytelling Hour, and it is time for me to close out the show. So thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Join us again next Monday at 12 noon at www.enlightenradio.org. The Enlightened Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to share, preserve, and expand our own stories. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned, though. Don't lose this website, because you want to hear Sherlock Holmes coming up next after a little bit of music. See ya!